Welcome to Adventure Guys, a podcast for humans and dogs. I'm Eric the Human.
I'm Nick the Human. Here we are.
Very special episode today.
Yeah. We've been counting down for this, waiting for it, talking about it, and we were lucky enough for it to actually exist and be real. Fiona and Cake.
It's here. And I'm not going to verify this. Nobody else verify it, but I think we're the only Adventure Time podcast to review Fiona and Cake.
Yeah, so welcome, any new listeners. It's good to have you here. Welcome to Adventure Guys. This is a podcast where we talk about Adventure Time, but also don't talk about Adventure Time. Today, though, it will be. We do have a lot of stuff to talk about. I mean, look, we've been building up to this moment, and last episode we did kind of like a nice little rewatch of the trailer and looked up some tidbits online, actually over the last couple episodes. But there were still like a lot of questions as to like what was this series going to be. And it dropped last night at midnight. We're recording this on the 1st. And was it midnight?
No, I think, well, I don't know what time it was. It was yesterday.
Yeah, it was yesterday. And they dropped two episodes, which was a surprise to us.
Which just means we're going to have to review two episodes in the time it would normally take us to do one. Well, in our release schedule anyway.
Yeah.
We're going to do the first episode today, and then hopefully next week we'll get out another episode real quickly.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about episode one today. Even by the end of episode one, I think we're still just really getting into whatever this series is
going
to be.
So we're going in order.
Yeah.
We should have reviewed episode two first.
I know, we never go in order. New listener, beware. Although you can probably see it from the feed.
Which, hey, blessing and a curse. We are the only podcast that is allowed to jump ahead to Fiona and Cake.
Yeah.
Because everyone else has to go in order.
Yeah.
Those are the rules.
I know, the rules benefit us today.
Yeah, any other podcast that's like stuck in season five or whatever, sorry, but you got five more entire seasons and Distant Lands to get through before you're allowed to review Fiona and Cake.
Yeah.
It would be against the law if they didn't.
Yeah, so, I mean, Fiona and Cake episode. I mean, Eric, should we just go right into it?
Sure. Episode discussion.
Episode discussion.
Okay, what was the title of this episode? We reviewed Fiona and Cake, season one, episode one.
Yeah, we didn't even look at that. I'm going to pull it up right now. There's going to be, I definitely want to look. We didn't even really do this beforehand. I looked at it just briefly, but I want to look at whatever the, all the credits and everything. Because we're going to have to figure out who all these voice actors are. There's going to be a lot to talk about in Miscellanymania. Okay, cool. So episode one is just Fiona Campbell.
Oh, that's right. Her full name.
Yep.
Previously unrevealed.
Yeah.
And it's the title of the episode.
Yeah. As the episode opens, it's a completely new like look and feel to the show. That was disorienting for me. Eric quickly identified it as a Sailor Moon reference.
Yes. So the opening sequence, it seemed pretty clear that it was like a dream sequence. A little bit of a cliche to like open up an episode, let alone a new series with a dream sequence, but whatever. I am forgiving because it was funny. It was a cool Sailor Moon reference. And it, given that the rest of the episode is an entirely new world, with entirely different characters or like even different versions of the alternate version characters that we've seen before, the opening sequence gave us the Fiona character, the Cake character voiced by Roz Ryan that we are familiar with from the Adventure Time series.
Right.
Even if they were doing something weird and wacky, like it anchored us a little bit.
It did anchor us. And it does provide, you know, they made it worth their while because it provided another cool device within the story. First off, yeah, it anchors us. And then when we get the reveal of the real Fiona and Cake, that's like a moment and then like, oh, so this is what's happening. And then also that whole dream is sort of a guiding, like underlying principle for the entire rest of the episode.
Yeah.
Like a little mystery going on.
Yeah. We see like Fiona and Cake just trying to save a bus full of innocent civilians that are, I don't know, they're being taken hostage or something. I don't know what's going on exactly, but they're in an adventure, and it's a Sailor Moon reference. So the main character, Sailor Moon Fiona, is kind of inept at actually doing the job. And we get the Tuxedo Mask character to save the day, which is like an alternate version of Ice King that is Ice Prince.
Ice Prince.
And on like a giant bird that's a reference to Gunther.
Yeah. And now when he comes in and he's like really charming and like whoever does the voice acting of Ice Prince, I was pretty swooning.
It seemed like it was not Tom Kenny.
No. Oh, no. This was whoever was doing that voice. I was like, ooh, I'm interested in an Ice Prince, honestly. I'm looking here into the credits, but I don't see it. And with that, honestly, I wanted to say to you was, I was trying to figure out like what was going on in this scene. I was like, is this a Ice King invented thing? Because like now it's Ice Prince.
Right. Because
that's where Fiona and Kit comes from. It's fan fiction written by Ice King. But it becomes clear that it's not, because it's like, it's different. It's more sophisticated. And maybe that's why they chose Sailor Moon, because that's Fiona would watch and her dream would look like.
Yeah, well, and also the first Fiona and Cake episode from Adventure Time had a Sailor Moon reference, which we talked about on the last episode we reviewed.
Great call. I found it a little weird. It was weird because just opening with a whole like a pastiche when it's a new show that we don't know what's happening is kind of an odd move.
Yeah, well, I mean, I get it, because it's like it's gonna take a few minutes to catch your bearings no matter what the situation is. So they might as well like lean into it. Let's just make it wacky. Let's just make it like impossible to decipher, because it's gonna be an adjustment. Yeah, the only thing that like really ties it in to the rest of the episode is like this thing about ice.
Yeah,
which. Again, like where is the invention of Ice King? Like where does that come into play? It's like there's this like thing, Cake is seeking out ice throughout the whole episode. Like why? What does that mean? Like what's the connection to Simon wearing the crown? And
but that is interesting. It's also interesting. It shows the connection between Fiona and Cake, because it's Fiona's dream, yet Cake is still seeking out the ice and is looking for it, which is very interesting. She's got the eye for it too, and it's like in her brain. Really weird. But kind of cool. And then we come out of the dream because there's an alarm going, which is an alarm clock, BMO, 7:30 a.m. And what's revealed is Fiona's like studio apartment in ostensibly like a New York City kind of a spot.
Yeah. So two real quick things that I noticed with the alarm clock. As it's buzzing, as she's coming out of her dream sequence, it sounded like for a moment, the weird transition with the alarm clock going off is first the Ice Prince like vocalizing, wah, 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 right?
Yeah.
It sounded like for just a second, there was John DiMaggio screaming.
Oh, really?
I wonder if there was like a little cameo there. And then immediately after, we do hear Nikki Yang say something out of the alarm clock.
Yeah.
So, and in an episode that was Easter Egg City, like there's references to the mainline series all over this episode, and like little guest cameos and stuff. And some of them seem like we're supposed to catch on. Some of them seem like little treats if we do catch them. It was definitely Nikki Yang at one point. I wonder if there was actually John DiMaggio in there.
Oh, very interesting. I wonder too. I want to go back and watch. And you could go back and this really calls for a rewatch immediately, because there was so much happening.
This episode was rich.
Yes.
For Adventure Time fans, there was a lot there. And I'm going to have to watch it again later tonight.
So then we see Fiona's like studio apartment. It's kind of messy.
I really liked the tone of the art.
Yes.
Immediately, I noticed that like the background art is different than Adventure Time.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. So the Adventure Time background art is actually kind of unique in the way that it works in the show. Like Ghost Shrimp's background designs are the same style as the character designs. A lot of these shows, you really feel the separation of the character on top of the background art. Like regular show is like that. Mm-hmm. Steven Universe is like that. Steven Universe has beautiful background art, but it is very squarely different from the characters. And the thing about Adventure Time was anything felt like it could be interacted with because the background art matched precisely the character art. So like in a show like Regular Time, you see like, you know, the sort of like drawn or painted background art. And then there's like the one item that is like the character art style. Well, okay, so they're going to interact with that.
Yeah, that's that like a classic thing you learn as like a little kid. I didn't even know these terms, but you're watching it and you just see in the corner, there's like, you know, like a garbage can, a tree, but then there's like a rake and the rake is just on top of the background. And you're like, something's going to happen with the rake.
Yeah, exactly. And so that was a cool thing about Adventure Time is like you never get that cue.
No.
Everything is, it flows effortlessly into it. This Fiona and Cake, there's a little bit more separation between the character art and the background art, but I love the background art. It's a little bit more muted, more pastel. It seems a little bit less flat. There's a little bit more dimension to it. And I don't know who the background artist is. I guess we'll...
I was looking it up, trying to look at... I'm on IMDb right now, and they like incomplete credits.
Yeah, it just came out yesterday.
Yeah. I know we were watching the credits for a bit, but it was like so much to take in. So we'll get to it. Well, we're going to have to wait and see more. But that was, it was really cool. And the whole tone of her room was great, and it's...
The detail was so fun. Yeah. Like, there's just like... PlayStation on the ground, like a little like a sock draped over it and stuff, and
a Dan Electro guitar right there, which is kind of a perfect Adventure Time guitar.
Yeah, really great environments. It felt similar to being Puppy Cat in a way, which makes a lot of sense because Natasha Allegri is a huge part of this. Yeah, it's a it was a fresh take on like familiar settings and characters and stuff. It's honestly everything that you kind of want.
Yeah.
Whereas like Distant Lands felt like direct continuations of Adventure Time that expanded the universe. This feels like something new.
It
like,
does.
Like it's not a departure, but it feels like something new.
Yeah.
Which I really appreciate.
I totally agree. It was very clear. Maybe that was also part with the opening dream and then you come here and then they do the theme song, which is a completely different theme song. It's like completely different kind of aesthetic. Like it feels within the world of Adventure Time and the whole thing, but it's like clearly a new thing.
And I wonder, we just only watched the first episode, but I wonder if all these episodes are going to have a cold open and then the theme song, which would be very different from every Cartoon Network show.
Yeah. And very different from, from the original Adventure Time. I was looking up here to find the theme song, and it says I'm finding online that it looks it's written by Natasha Allegri. Is this from the original series? I don't know, but I really liked it. I was like, this is like a nice power pop song. Let's listen to it because it's fun. It's sort of existential. There was the thing we, I don't know if it was one of the recent episodes, we found an interview or a statement from the head of HBO Max who took over the animation division with all the stuff, and everyone was like one of the programming heads. And she had said that it was going to be for Adventure Time fans, and they, didn't she say something like she hoped that it would have grown with the fans? Like,
yes, it was going to be targeted for a little bit more of a mature audience than the original Adventure Time.
Yeah. And it was like, oh man, I want to find.
Yeah. There were definitely moments like she says, damn it. And she like takes off her shirt and her pants.
Yes. I almost thought she said fuck in the beginning of this. I thought I heard that.
I think she said something different. Like it was more of a Jake-ism, like not fuck him up, but wreck him up or something like that.
Okay, yeah. But yeah, anyway, let's listen to the theme song again and watch it. Someone already uploaded it to YouTube. Wow, 437,000 views. We should have done that. Even when I'm with my friends, I'm alone inside. 'Cause nothing really matters, and I don't know what's sadder. The fact that I even try, or that my hopes and dreams are shattered. I'm not really feeling like myself today.
Hey. It's very tropey in a sitcom kind of way, which I wonder if we're going to get different intro sequences for other episodes. Because the title card that went up for the episode title, Fiona Campbell.
Yeah, where it was like
the Seinfeld
thing. Yeah, it was
parody.
Like,
yeah,
super super odd.
that line, every time I leave my apartment, I want to die.
Yeah, I want to die. Even when I'm with my friends, I'm alone inside.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God. I said, after that, I was like, Eric, they're coming right for us. that's when I was like, oh, they are. I was trying to find the quote, but I was like, yeah, this is targeted towards you've been growing a little bit. And obviously, I guess they're supposed to be like probably, what would you say, 20s, mid-20s, late-20s?
I would just say millennials.
Millennials.
Like, it's those are the creators of Adventure Time and the show. Like, we got to remember, like, the animation school to Cartoon Network employment pipeline comes very early.
Yeah.
And like all the people that were working on this were like our age or like a couple years older at most.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, so like we are the target demo
of this show.
Yeah,
I know. And it felt, that's why I was like, I felt very relatable. I was like, I guess it's 20s, but I was like, no, I don't know, man. Living in New York in my 30s feels very much like what they were depicting here.
Yeah. Like if I were to guess the age of the Fiona character in the show, they've said it's not analogous to like what Finn was in Adventure Time. Like I would say, If we ended Adventure Time when Finn was 17, mm-hmm. and that was 5 or 6 years ago, then, yeah, I mean, at least 23, 24, this character ages, like,
yeah,
beyond college age.
Oh, yeah. We're out. We're in the world now, which is cool. And I was talking to a friend about this recently, which is, like, there used to be a whole genre of show and movie that delved into this, be it you were in your 20s or 30s and you're like figuring life out, which is very much where I am right now. And I guess you are as well. Like a lot of everyone is, but that sort of genre of movie hasn't really been made recently. Like, you know what I mean? Like the slice of life, like people figuring it out, as much as it used to. And when watching this, I was like, oh yeah, I used to love watching some stuff like this.
Right. Like what? Like the Seth Rogen kind of world.
Yeah.
Like now that he's older and more successful, it's like that, like that crowd isn't kind of
focused
on those issues anymore.
Yeah. And there's always like smaller movies that were kind of like it. I'm trying to think, like Michael Cera was in a new movie coming out. That's what made me think of it. Have you seen the ad for that movie? He hasn't been in like stuff in a while. He showed up in Barbie. The adults. So this trailer came out. It was actually funny because I was like, oh, Michael Cera's back. I knew he lives in Brooklyn, I believe, by the way, too.
Really?
Yeah. Then I went into the trailers and I watched the trailer and went to the comments, and it's got that energy of those early, of those indie movies from 08 to 2011. I'm a sucker. And people are like, yeah, they don't make movies like this anymore, and it's almost like indie movie. It's sort of like indie rock, where it's like they're not really independent anymore. Like studios are making them, but it was still like a genre of movie. I don't know. I'm drawing a blank on like more examples of these that aren't, I mean, I guess like, you know, like probably the success of some of the Rogan stuff or like a Garden State or these movies or Wes Anderson that like made a bunch of money. Then there was all sorts of stuff like that. But anyway, it was cool to be like, oh yeah. And yeah, she's immediately just, it's also like, it's nice that it's like intimate. We start pretty intimate in Fiona's apartment, getting ready for work with cake.
The thing that I immediately noticed about like, yeah, this opening scene is that it goes on way longer than it would have if it was an Adventure Time episode.
Yes.
And yes, the episode is longer. Like it's more than 22 minutes, right? It's like a little bit like 24 or something. Mm-hmm. Was that? And it seems like the same amount of things that would have happened in an Adventure Time episode happens, but we just have a little bit more time to breathe with them. Like all the same beats happen, like all like the silly like slapstick kind of stuff, like cake is just like flopping around on different things, and like all the weird Adventure Time things happen, but there's a little bit more time to like sit with it and react to it. And just like some of the moments that Adventure Time had really like dialed in was like, yeah, they would like in an 11-minute episode, they would just sit with the characters for a little bit. But we get so much more of that now. And I think it's serving it well.
Yeah, I know. That's the tone. I mean, it is a little more adult, a little older, like, frantic.
It's not a mile a minute.
Yeah.
Like Adventure Time was. Like it's a slightly more relaxed while maintaining the same kind of humor.
Yes.
Which is, I think, a huge part of what makes it feel fresh.
Mm-hmm.
It's giving us all the same kind of like turns and comedic beats that we wanted, but it's just letting us like relax a little bit more with them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really well said. And it's welcomed. I like it. And it's like a really nice version of it. So it's not so dry. Like I felt when I watched Close Enough, which was the show that J.G. Quintel did after Regular Show, and it felt sort of like a sequel show, even though it wasn't, but it did.
Yeah.
It kind of like this.
Yeah.
Except they're, you know, in Regular Show, they're already kind of like, when that show starts, they're like 22 or 23, and they're kind of early mid 20s. I think
23 is, yeah.
Yeah. And then they're, that show, they're basically in their 20s. And then they're like, I need to do something else. And then this show picks up and it's like, oh, now we're in our mid to late 30s and have a kid.
Yeah. I think that's a great parallel. I think, yeah, Close Enough. Yeah, what Close Enough did to Regular Show is what Fiona Cake is doing to Adventure Time.
Mm-hmm. And I still felt like even that had the same humor and more room to breathe, but I almost felt like I needed a sec to catch up to that one. Close Enough, for some weird reason.
It was still faster paced than what we're doing here. Yeah.
Yeah, but for I found this less jarring or something. Maybe it's because it is in the same world and that there is like a comfort factor to that.
Yes.
I don't know. It was a night. I really felt like just from the first couple of minutes and through the end of the episode, and I can't wait for more, where they did really thread the needle nicely, where it feels like what you know, it's new, it's going to be different, but I feel okay. And I'm like, they're going to do this right.
Yeah. I mean, a headline is I freaking loved this. I think they really nailed it. I kind of expected them to. Honestly, I did not even consider a world in which this didn't meet expectations.
Yeah, I know. They've never really missed on Adventure Time, so I wasn't worried either. So then what happens? Okay, so then we go... Yeah, Cake's being crazy. We get really cool Cake vision, which was like in Cake's like eyes and like hearing what Cake hears, which is just like
like the Peanuts adults.
Yeah. Cake. That's really good. And and Cake's just like going to the ice maker and rolling around the ice. Hasn't eaten in a few days. Refuses to eat. It's cool. It's interesting. I mean, do we ever get a view of we never really see Finn and Jake interact as like real people, like in a human dog relationship.
We get the farm world version.
That's what I was thinking of.
Which is off-putting.
Yeah.
And I think that's what they're trying to do when they go to that universe. It doesn't feel natural at all. It's like they're using the normalness of like a boy dog relationship to make it feel uneasy. And that's not what's happening here. It's like, it just feels very genuine, very, single girl in the city kind of like it's got enough of the familiar tropes, like from real world entertainment kind of, to make it feel grounded in a way that like Adventure Time isn't usually.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that. I think that's a fresh take on it.
Yeah. And Cake still has clearly a lot of character, and how Jake may be, you know.
Yeah. So I wonder if that's Roz Ryan doing the cat sounds, probably, right?
Oh, that's a great question. I'm imagining, yeah. Yeah, keeps it. That's what it's listed as.
Yeah, because we only actually get her doing real voice acting for like that opening dream sequence. Which is a tough conceit. It's like, I understand like what's happening in this episode and what the point is and where the narrative has to go, and that it really makes it impossible to get Roz Ryan like in on this particular story, but it's tough that we only get like those opening 2 minutes of her, because she is a huge comedic source in all of the Fiona and Cake adventures. So the sooner we get to her actually being the character Cake, the better. I understand why it didn't happen a lot here, but hopefully we get it in episode 2.
Yeah. At least we got the dream sequence.
Yeah.
So then they go and they're going to go. She's like, oh, you got to go to the vet. They only have lunchtime appointment. You got to come with me to work. Now we get to go see where Fiona works, and which is a tour guide.
It's very silly.
And as we go into the world, you just start seeing things. This is where a lot of the Easter eggs were. Like, I saw a hotel that had like a Magic Man hat on it. Then we see like, they go into the bus. I'm trying to think of all the Easter eggs we were like calling out as we were going, but you're immediately like, there's a starchy guy.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh yeah, there's this, I'm like, I saw Abergadaniel. Yeah. And it's funny. And then like later we get banana guards and there's probably some other ones we were like missing. This is why I want to go back and rewatch it.
Yeah. There's a lot that you're meant to catch. And then there's some for super fans that happens super quickly, I think, but
yeah. And
like there was just like a random girl standing on the sidewalk for a very quick shot that just had one of what was his name, Marceline's ex-boyfriend that was a huge dick.
I don't remember. Let me Google that.
Who gave away the stuffed animal?
Oh, Ash.
Ash.
Yeah, we saw an Ash on the street.
Yeah.
That's who it was, yeah.
That weird mohawk that just hangs in front of his face.
Yeah. So that was a really good Easter egg. And then also obviously Marshall Lee is in the back hanging out. And yeah, so we could talk about that, but I think what's interesting in this show is that she says it later. Like, we get it from the theme song that she's kind of feeling detached and depressed and doesn't know what to do. And through this, she's like had a bunch of jobs. She doesn't really care about the jobs. She's talking about how she like wishes there was more magic or mystery or adventure in the world. And, you know, I guess this is kind of, I'm thinking about like why relating to it, but I guess like, you know, if Finn was in the real world and forced to try to make his way through it, it's like, I don't think Finn's going to settle down in an office job or hold down something really steady, because he's like an adventurer. It's like every day is a different thing. It's mystery. It's like discovery. It's all these things. So this feels really in character to how, if forced to grow up in the real modern world, what might happen. And I think what makes it relatable to all of us is that we all are kind of Finn when we're younger and everything's new and discovery and everything. And then you get older and you're just like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah. Yeah. So mild spoiler, I guess, but like we kind of know like from promotional art and stuff that's been revealed that like we will see an older Finn show up in the series at some point.
Yeah.
Which I wonder what the connection between those two characters is actually going to be. Like Finn, we know that through reincarnation, his soul, right? Like it came to Earth through the comet. And he started his earthly journey as a butterfly, right? So like we don't know like what happened like over those thousands of years, but presumably he didn't really become like conscious or sentient until after the mundanity of our current world was over, right? So like his soul was like reincarnated through all these different ages as like a continual experience of like discovery and, yeah, and adventure and being, you know, involved in this world of magic and stuff. So see, like, so is the Fiona character like connected? Is that like the same soul? Is there like a parallel sort of track between these two characters? And like, and having Fiona in this world in which Finn never was,
yeah,
like is an incongruence there. So I mean, I guess, you know, we're all wondering, but like when these two characters do interact finally,
yeah,
what is the actual connection going to be between them?
Yeah.
Cause I also don't like, I'm not like 100% just like, oh, this is the girl version of Finn. Like they're the same character. Like it seems like, especially like, and you know, it seems like from the Fiona Kick episodes of Adventure Time, and now especially from this episode cementing it, is that Fiona is her own character.
Yes.
Like it is not just
another take. I'm drawing parallels, but it seems like, yeah, by the end of this series, it's going to be this whole own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I wonder how narratively they're going to negotiate that connection. Because I really do feel like there's room for Fiona to have 100% distinct characteristics.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, this is just episode one. We don't even know how many episodes we're going to get, do we? 10? Did we say 10? I think it was 10.
I think it was 10, okay, or 11, but I don't know where we got that from. Let me see if it says it up here. But you're very right, which is like, also, it's not just like, are there souls? It's like, yeah, what is the connection? But also, like, how's it? I mean, really, in the next episode, we'll probably see it, but it's like, is that where Cake is going into? It seems that Cake is going to go and do some sort of other dimension that's like more Adventure Time, but clearly not like ooh when we knew it. So it's going to be very interesting to see what that choice is. So, yes, back to what's happening in it. Fiona is giving the tour. It's not going great. She's barely into it. It's just like trying to get through it as a job. Yeah, and like a shitty job. Marshall Lee is there, and we remarked, like, is that Donald Glover? And then it, like, after a couple lines of dialogue, you're like, it is. Yeah, Eric, you're like, that'd be a big get if they got him.
Yeah.
But
he's been quoted a lot recently because like there's supposed to be a Lando TV series happening,
yeah,
on Disney Plus, and
he was gonna be it.
Yeah, and it's been in development for like years now, and like the showrunner is like back and forth about it, and they're just like, yeah, we're waiting for the top brass to give us an update, like what's going on. And Donald Glover was like, yeah, I like playing Lando, like that. There's a lot of like room in that character for me to like explore artistically, but I don't fucking know what's happening. Like I think like supposedly the show is going on. Like I'd love to do it, but if it's just going to be like a corporate cash grab, I don't want to do it, you know?
Yeah.
So like that was such a treat, honestly. Like do you see that movie?
Yeah.
Like
Solo.
Yeah. I think it's more maligned than it deserves. I mean, if you're a Star Wars fan, you should like it.
Yeah. It's probably not what we all thought we were going to get. Like there's so much baggage and expectation that's going to come along with a Han Solo movie.
Right.
And And it does not live up to that, which we basically want like Indiana Jones in space, you know, like that's Harrison Ford. Like, let's fucking go. But I'd be interested to rewatch it now, knowing what it is and being like, oh man, now just like on its own merits. How was it?
Yeah. And Donald Glover as Lando Calrissian was the bright spot of that movie.
Yes. I mean, he's got so much charisma. He was still like a little like, I just think in general, I wanted the whole movie to be a bit more high energy animated, zipping and jiving, but it's like, it's kind of dark, like visually too, like the choice of how that movie looks. Cause like when Harrison Ford and Chewbacca and the whole crew is on stage, like it's like the more cartoony thing. Like that's the thing that you as a kid latch on to. So then to have the movie be a kind of drab and a little slow was sort of like, oh man.
Yeah.
But he was great in it. And I would totally welcome that. You know, I was also thinking was too, it's like, you know, I bet that he gets this, people talk to him about being Marshall Lee a lot. I'd imagine. And also he just opened his whole own new creative studio, Gilga. Have you looked into that at all?
No.
And I'd imagine that if you're like financing this whole new like creative agency or whatever like project he's doing, be like, oh, animated series? 4 days of work and you're going to pay me? Okay, perfect. You know?
Yeah, that's an interesting angle because Atlanta's over.
Mm-hmm.
Famously, he doesn't do the shit that he doesn't want to do anymore.
No. So he made this whole thing, Gilga, which you should go, they had a whole thing up and they basically didn't fill it out. They were just accepting resumes and going through them. It's like this whole encompassing, they're going to do fashion and produce TV shows and movies and also have a fashion angle and like a food angle. And it's like all about just quality. It's not about like quantity. He said like, I'm going to see this quote that was in this GQ article. That was pretty amazing. Corruption. He said this corruption for Gilga would be when we stop moving like a rich kid. What do you mean? Rich kids don't do shit for money. They do based off things where it's going to make them happy. He's like, people don't get quality anymore. They need a filter. Gilga is a perfect filter for that shit. So I think it's just like, oh, I've got resources. Let's just focus on making like really good shit. Which is an interesting angle. And I think it's smart and there's a place for it, especially within like how we all feel, which is like quantity is the game. Like in terms of like what's hitting, like, you know, especially like music and like the strategy on TikTok is like in short form content is it's like, yeah. Talk about it being like, I talk about it as sort of like a digital slot machine where you're putting in your token into TikTok and you're like, all right, baby, like this could be the one that does it for me. So then when you're playing that game, what do you want but more tokens? So it's like, we got to put a bunch of tokens into this game to try to like have it pay off. Or like, well, we'll pick up a few dollars there. And then before you know it, like that's what you're doing. And versus like, I'm going to just make like a really good one thing that speaks for itself. You're like, yeah, I'm going to do that. But then I got to make, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
And then there's the world for it where say you have like a really good song or a really good movie or a really good restaurant. And then to promote it, you got to put in all the digital slot machines. That is one thing. But I also think that like the whole concept of art is becoming that because like, cool, you're going to do all that to pull people back into the song. But at the end of the day, when you put together the views that you're getting on TikTok, if you're doing pretty well, you're gonna be like, oh, cool, I've got hundreds of thousands, or I got millions of views across these 20 TikToks I made, and then the song probably might not get as many. I don't know. It's like all of a sudden that's, you're putting all this energy. That's kind of the thing. You know what I'm getting at? Where all of a sudden it's like, wait, what are we even doing anymore? Like art, that's what it is. So I am very intrigued about what this yields. There's definitely feels like there's like a place where people are thinking about that again. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I've always thought Donald Glover is one of the greatest artistic minds of our generation. And I don't think he really has like maybe the pop culture traction that I associate with what he deserves, but
he had a moment where it all hit. Like, This Is America was the number one song in the country when it came out. And it was as Atlanta was like the most watched show on FX and he won those awards. And then he was like, Lando was coming. So he did like, he really timed it well and put together everything to like ascend to that point. But then after that, you know, the movie didn't really hit. Atlanta's just a fucking weird show.
Yeah.
And after that,
it only got weirder.
Yeah. And after that, there's not really a Gambino album after he put out the record. Forget what it's called. It's like a date where it was just all these like work in progress songs that he put out. And a couple more singles, but like there was never another like Gambino album after This Is America. So he kind of like, that was kind of the pinnacle like at that moment, but it was, yeah, but it's interesting. He's really, really good. We should go work at a Gilga. Although I can only imagine that'd be intimidating. I'd be like, you guys are so fucking cool, all of you. look at the cover of him on GQ. He's like in a farm in Ojai where he has like an orange tree. It's just cool, man. He's just fucking cool. Yeah, go read this article. But yeah, so then back to the show, Fiona gets fired in spectacular fashion.
Yeah, this is some real being puppy cat territory.
So okay, catch me up on the being puppy cat of it all. The being puppy cat creator is Natasha Allegri, right?
Yeah.
And did she previously work on Adventure Time?
Yeah.
What was the...
She was like one of the main storyboarders.
Okay, cool.
For a huge chunk of the series.
Yeah. Why? I got to go to the wiki then right now. Because I'm like, why? She's one of the main people behind this one as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Was she credited as one of the creators of this show?
We should have just like gone back and like stopped it and taken a picture of all the credits, because it's killing me that it's just like not up online. I just checked another site. Yeah, she wrote and storyboarded on Dad's Dungeon. During the first two seasons, she was a character designer on Adventure Time, storyboard revisionist, and designed a multitude of characters that also designed the gender swap. She created all the gender swap versions for the Fiona and Cake, and wrote and illustrated the Fiona and Cake comic miniseries. So she's all up in the Fiona and Cake lore.
I was surprised that I didn't see Rebecca Sugar's name anywhere. It must have appeared somewhere, right? She must have had something to do with this.
I would have thought.
I know. I guess we're still waiting on more detailed credits.
Yeah. So that was a very being puppy. That's where the boss demands the uniform back, and Fiona just like throws her pants to the floor and is like, take it. And the boss just goes, Jesus Christ. Yeah. Right.
So Jesus exists in this universe. Okay. Yeah. Or well, Jesus is purported to have existed in this universe.
Yeah. And then, they're going to go to the vet. On the way, they stop and meet the Princess Bubblegum stand-in.
Prince Gumball.
Prince Gumball.
Yeah. Who has been upgraded with voice actors from Neil Patrick Harris to Andrew Rannells. What's his name? Gary?
Gary, I think. That's what I was trying to look up right here. Andrew Rannells.
Gary Prince is his name.
Yeah. What's it called? Is like bakery, so it's like it's a little bit different than candy.
But his cookies are anthropomorphic.
Yes.
A lot of parallels.
Yeah.
This is such fertile ground just to like, let's just make another version of like all the things you know. Like, yeah, everything can relate to everything else. It's it's going to be a while before I think Adventure Time fans get sick of like pointing out all the little.
Oh no, it was like so fun.
Yeah.
Like it was bringing me joy to see it.
Yeah.
Nostalgia is real. I love it. Sweet. And then, yeah, they have a whole like exchange in there and things aren't going well for Gary either. They leave. They've been friends for forever. It's an interesting to see like that backstory. I feel like we'll get that developed. Then as she leaves, she runs back into Marshall Lee, drops her coffee, reveals she might not have enough money for rent because of the job being lost, and that she lives in an apartment that's owned by Marshall Lee's mom. Right?
It's funny because technically Marceline had squatter's rights on the treehouse before Finn and Jake got there.
Oh, wow. There you go. And then he's like, well, I can save you money on that. Just go see my friend Ellis. And like, it'll just give him some of this food and you'll be fine. And she's like, okay, I'll try that. She goes to the park, ends up meeting someone named Hunter that shows her the beauty of the park, which was an interesting scene. It looked really cool. It was animated well. I couldn't find a parallel for this Hunter character. It was vaguely romantic. Maybe it'll pay off later. But yeah, in this episode, it was like just like a one-off scene that it was interesting, right? I guess maybe it'll be a setup later.
Yeah, I don't know. That on the wiki, that one does not have a blue underline to click and find out more. So who knows about Hunter? The character design, I feel like it's familiar, but in a way I can't place. Like there's no nose. And the eyes are very wide.
Yeah.
Is it
more like Japanese? I don't really know. Like the Hunter.
Like more of an anime style?
Yeah, the Hunter character like really felt it to me. You know? You know what I'm getting at here?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, look. I don't know. The eyes. No nose. Yeah, it's really interesting.
Was that the voice actor?
I think so. Yes. Vico Ortiz. And Fern. Although we don't really see Fern. Yes, and then they...
I mean, was that maybe just Huntress Wizard? Like... Oh, yes, 100% is Huntress, right. Yeah, because yeah, like Huntress Wizard's eyes, yeah, same eyes.
We got there.
Okay.
Okay. Fun.
Our listeners will probably just be like, you fucking idiots.
You guys are the experts. You're the experts. I listened to this podcast 100 episode. What? Yeah. Yeah, and then they go in. We'll look more at this article, or we can look more at this.
This is a great article. It's giving us the characters and who voiced them. Okay, yes. So I see Queenie was Chelsea Peretti.
Yes, which was the boss of Fiona.
Yeah, she's hilarious.
She is. I have not seen her much around since Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Did you watch her stand-up special that came out like 6 years ago or something?
I remember one from like... over a decade ago, like when she was on Comedy Central Presents and something else, but I don't know if I saw the 6 years ago one.
I think she had one on Netflix like 6 years ago, and it was fucking hilarious.
Cool. I should go rewatch that. Maria Bamford was starchy. That's very fun.
I love Maria Bamford. She was just on Marin. I got to listen to that episode. Yeah. It just went up this week.
Yeah, she must be promoting something new. She
wrote a book.
Oh, she was on something else as well.
I should pick that book up. I bet it's hilarious.
Yeah. I'm really interested in seeing it. I'm looking at other folks in here. Some of this must be spoilers for the next app.
Oh, yeah. We didn't watch episode 2.
Yeah. And I'm not seeing... I don't know who some of these people are. We have Phil Lamar, Erica Mendez.
Oh, Phil Lamar?
Yeah. Listen. Right there. Goo Zombies, Dog Taurus, Taurus number 4.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll see. Dan Mintz is in here. Yeah, it'll be fun. So, yeah, then they go to visit, back to it. They go to visit another one, which is very fun, which was they go to visit Ellis, after Hunter, Hunter's wizard, and Ellis, LSP, which LSP, and it's the human version of Lumpy Space Princess or Prince or whatever. And
not much difference between the gender swapped characters.
No. And is feeding a bunch of squirrels. And then if you pay it,
which is what LSP does when she's homeless living in the forest.
Right. And she talks about how she has this, or he talks about how he has this really special connection with woodland creatures, which is very funny. And then is going to inspect Cake and gives it some catnip and knows nothing. And we get like a very extended, funny, like fake psychic thing where Ellis is asking Fiona like what the symptoms are. And then he's like saying what he thinks the symptoms are. Honestly, I was like zoning out. It's funny. Even in this, I'm like, all right, let's get through the LSP bullshit.
I know. This was the moment where it's like, okay, Fiona is realizing something about herself through describing Cake's symptoms.
Yep.
Like, all right, here's the emotional core that we've been aiming for this entire episode thus far. It's annoyingly hilarious that LSP is the character that brings her to this realization. But
yes, yes. And then through a vision, Cake sees some sparkling and follows it, runs off, and then it's an ice chest in like a cake or like a ice cream cellar, like, you know, like a person, like a vendor who's rolling around an ice cream cart in the park. Cake jumps into it and disappears through a portal.
Yeah. And that's the end of the episode.
That's the end of the episode.
I was like, oh shit, it's over. Damn. Like, I'm glad they gave us episode 2 right off the bat, but
I know
we didn't watch it yet.
We didn't watch it. yeah. Did you see the snail in this episode?
Oh, fuck.
Eric, did you see the snail?
No, I did not see the snail. Nick, did you see the snail?
I didn't. And I was going to ask you, I thought about it at the beginning. I was like, Eric, do you think there's going to be a snail in here?
I 100% did not even consider it.
I did.
It did not cross my mind.
Yeah, you're like me. I didn't see it, though. I was too busy taking in the world.
No, just, yeah, enamored with everything that was going on. Like, it really, outstanding episode. Like, yeah.
Was there snails in the Distant Land specials?
I think there weren't, except for like when it was a character. Was it a character in Together Again?
It was, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty sure we were looking for it to no avail because it just did not exist in the other couple. Well, all right. We didn't see the snail. I kind of hope they put snail in these and we just suck.
Yeah.
But they don't need to.
No.
We'll still ask the question every episode.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Before, I feel like Miscellany Mania is going to...
We did it all.
We did a lot. Before we do that, I would assume we're getting some new listeners on this episode.
I hope so.
Because we're actually doing something topical for...
Is this a good episode? Are we doing good?
Tell me I'm good.
Yeah, please give us affirmation. Did you see the mail at gmail.com?
I noticed a couple of cool things that I checked on our analytics for the first time, like in ages. We're coming up on 20,000 plays total.
Yeah. Very cool.
We get about 100 plays an episode when they first air. But some of these episodes are like really up there. Like our first episode has over 800 plays.
Well,
I guess people are just starting from the beginning.
Well, I was looking at this actually the other day too. And I was like, oh yeah, 100 people listen to each episode. But then like I was going into the analytics and realizing like over time that like most of them are approaching like 150, 200. Like as time is going on, it's like, oh, people are discovering this podcast.
Yeah. Like the biggest episode upon release date was our Jeff Rosenstock interview, mm-hmm. Which makes sense. But our first episode has almost twice as many plays as that just because people are starting from the top, which is cool.
Yeah.
We've got almost 300 followers on just Spotify, which like these numbers seem a little crazy to me because
I hope you let's just put it all out there. No mystery.
We have a pretty consistent base, which is great. Like, we're not an interview podcast. You know, like, interview podcasts will jump up around, you know, episode to episode, depending on who the guest is.
Yeah. Or topic podcasts. Like, if you have, like, if you get a, you can choose your topics that are relevant or that might draw new viewers with each topic you cover.
Yeah. But yeah, we're just enjoying a pretty consistent listener base, and I think it's really rad. And maybe people are listening for the first time with this episode. And if you are, I hope you stick around or start from the beginning, like a lot of other people have done. It sometimes sucks, but usually it's pretty good.
Yeah.
I appreciate everyone who sticks with the episodes that suck.
Me too. That's just part of the podcast. I mean, look, we talked about the quality thing versus quantity thing. Podcasting truly is, though. I mean, we're not changing the art to, but like, this is a volume game where you're gonna have ups and downs when you're doing like a project this, which we've signed ourselves up for like 300 episodes of this podcast, like,
yeah,
like a 10-year ordeal.
I know, we're like a third done.
I know.
How long have we been doing this? 3 years.
Yeah, just about. Actually,
I think it was just our three-year anniversary.
That's insane.
Happy 3-year anniversary, everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Probably right. I think we recorded our first couple episodes in August of 2020 and released them in September.
Yeah. Which sort of makes me want to throw up, but then also makes me kind of proud that we've like really stuck with this endeavor for this long.
Yeah. Along with the million other podcasts that were started during the pandemic, we're still going. This is, what episode number is this? 119 or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, 822, 2020.
Yeah, it's been over 3 years.
Yeah, I'm happy for us. You know, I'm still working on the same songs that I wrote. I never was demoing songs during that time that I'm still like, oh, I'm gonna record them for a record.
I've released 4 records since we started this podcast.
Amazing. I'm now ready to start entering that fold. You're helping me finish one of them. That will be coming soon. And then I have some people I can tell about it now, thanks to this podcast. We also, it's interesting too, I mean, that we're talking about our audience. We have gotten a bit more female and a bit more younger over the last like year.
That's good, because nothing is an indicator of something being uncool if only guys like it.
Older guys?
Yeah.
I know, it's funny. Like before, like there was like, never was like, it was like weirdly like 45 to 59 year old people were like higher for a second than 18 to 22 year old people, and we're like, what the fuck? But now it's like, it's gotten better. Better, just,
I mean, I think our core is still millennials, it seems. Yes, seems,
yes, as it would be.
No way to avoid that.
No, you're sweet, millennials. We love you. Yeah, but if you are enjoying it, you know, subscribe, rate us 5 stars on whatever podcast app you're listening to us on. You can follow us at Adventure Guys Podcasts. We're on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube. And you can donate to us at anchor.fm/Adventure Guys Podcast. But really, if you really want to help us, just tell a friend about it. That would be cool.
Yeah. And make sure you come out to our live show whenever we do that.
Yeah. Eric has a band called The Holophonics and makes soul records. Go to his Patreon. Patreon.com/EricDano.
Yep, that's it.
Eric does all the music, if you've been liking that in the podcast too. Actually, I did the next song, but that's the only one. Eric mixed it still. Yeah, so let's hear that song, Miscellanea Mania.
Time for Miscellanea Mania. Okay, well, this is the section where we go through all little trivia and factoids about the episode, as according to the wiki page that we're reading live on air.
Yeah, no, there's good stuff. I mean, I'm wondering too, dude. I was thinking about, like, we'll do it as we go, but I was also thinking, like, there might be a good point to do all these episodes and then do, like, like, I mean, we're going to do it, but I was almost wondering if we do like the Fiona and Cake, like recap, like the whole series, like, I guess we'll do that, whatever the finale episode is, but we don't need a whole episode just to talk about the whole series.
Again.
Yeah, again.
Are we just going to do this show for the next 10 episodes?
I think so, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
We should. We got to make sense sometime.
Break the format.
Yeah.
I mean, well, fix the format, because our format was already severely broken to begin with.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we went through so much. I feel like there haven't been a ton of like interviews about it that I've seen. But yeah, but see, like, here we go. Like 13 hours ago, we just got like a great interview, it looks like, with Adam Muto about this.
Okay.
And which is really cool. I feel like now that it's coming out, we're gonna get more lore, backstory, interviews, stuff we can really dive into.
Yeah, this, I guess, so baked into the premise of our podcast was that we are reviewing a show and episodes from many years ago. So there's a lot to discover in the intervening time since it aired and since everyone has been talking about it. But this is a little bit different for us.
Yeah.
I mean, basically like our analysis and our interpretation of something that's happening, and hey, maybe this will finally cement us as the number one Adventure Time analysts doing it right now.
Yeah,
because there's only primary source takes. There's no secondary sources on this yet.
No. Here we go. Well, let's get it up and out there so people can enjoy it. I'm just skimming this interview as we go, and they talk about Donald Glover, and Adam Muto says that he was just game to do it. These were established voices, so they went back to see who'd want to do it. But he was a surprise. He said he figured that he would be the busiest out of everyone, but he really made time to be a part of the show, and he appreciates it.
That's awesome.
He says, I think he just does whatever he's interested in, so it was really heartening that he would come back. Hell yeah.
I wonder if they... Did they say if they asked Neil Patrick Harris or if they just passed him over?
Let's look. Why would they pass him over? Oh, yeah. Not Neil Patrick Harris. I mean... It doesn't say in here. He must have done that would infer that they asked him and he turned it down, or they were just like, we don't want part of that guy. But why wouldn't they? I mean, there's the weirdness we talked about last episode.
Yeah, that's not.
But I mean, that's not enough to keep him from doing this, right? Like, there's nothing that maybe he just was busy. I don't know, man. It's weird. We gotta read through this whole thing and discuss it next day.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll get more into it. What we do have to discuss, which normally I would have said, if this wasn't a special episode where we might be having new listeners, I would have started the podcast with this, but, we can end it as I thought we should be more professional, which was that we got a new Jeff Rosenstock album.
Hey, there's our Jeff friends. Yeah. What an amazing time we're living in this particular week, Labor Day weekend, confluence of catastrophically amazing events.
yeah, we got, not only did we get this Fiona and Cake, but we got a new record from our shared favorite musician, Jeff Rosenstock, and former guest of the podcast.
Yeah.
If you're new, go listen to that interview, because I think we actually did a good job on that one. That was one of the good ones. Yeah, he put a new album. It's called Hell Mode. This podcast has now lived through, this is the third Jeff Rosenstock album this podcast has been out for. No Dream.
Well, No Sky Dream. Dream. No Dream came out just before we started.
Oh, right.
No Dream was May 2020.
Oh, yeah. Damn. Forgot. It was just, I just listened to it all pandemic. So we talked about it.
Oh, we talked about it a lot for sure.
Yeah. And then Sky Dream.
Yeah. I mean, that was like an album and a half. So,
and then like 2020 an dump, but we didn't really talk about that. And then,
oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, three albums, sure. Whatever.
Whatever. But yeah, but this is like the first like marquee album we've lived through on the podcast.
Yes.
Cool album.
I only listened to it once yesterday. I need to listen to it again.
Yeah. I love that Jeff, I was reading some interviews where Jeff was rolling out the record. He was just, because he's only, I forgot this, but after, he's like only surprised, he surprised released Post. He just dropped it on New Year's Day, which is like a suicide mission, but it was still everywhere and it was kind of actually quiet. So it was like a big deal. Then he surprise dropped No Dream as
on a,
well.
On a Wednesday. And I remember reading that he was like, because it was freshly into the pandemic.
Yeah.
And everyone was just sort of like dumping their music because like, oh, well, fuck, we got this record. We can't tour. Like, what does it even matter? And he was like, shit, how do I release this on a day that like I'm not doing promotion. So like, how can I put it out where it won't get overtaken by others? So I'll put it out on a Wednesday. Who the fuck releases albums on a Wednesday? And then he heard like through his like in channels that Les and Jake was planning something. And he's like, oh, fuck, did I just pick a date as the same day as a Les and Jake record release? But I think they just had like a weird merch drop or something on that day. And weirdly enough, for me, it was the day that I was moving from Texas back to New York.
Yeah.
I woke up that morning to pack the final pieces of my life into my van, and there's a new Jeff Rosenstock album. So I burned it onto a CD real quick. And I just put the CD in and I played it probably a dozen times on my drive.
Yeah. I mean, it's been one of our jokes in our friendship, which is that it takes me a second and then like a few, like even though it'll be like a year on and I'll be like, dude, this album is so good. That's what I kept saying to you about No Dream. Like it was like I had moved back here post pandemic and was getting more and more into it and was like, holy shit, this is like, I think his best record. And I've kind of had that experience for each of his records. I remember We Cool. At first I was like, oh, it's kind of like, you know, more Jeff stuff after Bomb. But then I sat with it and I was like, fuck, this is good. And then I remember listening to Wave Goodnight to You. That's the name of the song, right?
To me,
Wave Goodnight to Me off Worry, and I was like, oh, it's a Jeff song, and then you get Worry and you're just like, oh my fucking god, this album, like I've had that, it's like it grows and overtakes you, and then eventually I'm like, oh yeah, this is my favorite, his best album. It'll be interesting to see how this one grows.
Yeah, I'm gonna need to spend more time with it. I thought they were
closing with a 7 minute song, Three Summers. There's not a 7 minute Jeff Rosenstock song.
There is on Post.
There is? Like, oh, the first song. Yeah. USA. Yeah. 7.5 minutes. I forgot. Thank you for correcting me immediately.
And also the last track on No Dream.
Let Them Win.
Ohio Turnpike.
Is that one long? I know it's longer, but is it 7 minutes? I thought it was like five. 5:45. It has that outro. I miss coming home.
There's a lot of territory that it covers, though. Yeah. It's like, it's only 5.5 because it's. Well, it is almost 6 minutes because it's fast. Tempos are fast.
Yeah, it's a good one.
But yeah, there's some moments on this new record that really remind me of Bomb, the music industry, more than the last few albums. Like, there's some moments like, this is very Bomb-y. Like the song Head.
The second song?
Yeah.
That is total Bomb, the music industry.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. That's what's interesting about it is like, I thought after Bomb, the music industry, like, He really was maturing, and then on vacation, he's going to new areas. There's no ska. It's like indie rock. And then he like was like, okay, now I'm like an indie rock guitar guy. And then that's what I always thought was funny. And then on Week Cool, he opens with Get Old Forever, and you're like, wait, this could be a Bomb song. but then it's pretty much there. But yeah, but then like every so often, I thought that No Dream, I was almost like, this is... Like, it was like he was veering back towards his Bomb roots, where it was like more chaotic, more punk, more raucous. And then on Hell Mode, there's some stuff. I mean, there's some stuff on here that he never would, or I don't know. I feel like at this point, like it felt like there was some separation between Jeff Rosenstock solo and Bomb. But I feel like now with No Dream, and especially, yeah, like with the song like Head, it's sort of like, it's just one long body of work.
Yeah.
Yeah, that song is pretty sick. But I, you know, he does have songs on here that seem like they're doing some, you know, Heel Mode is like a really cool different kind of song for him. Kind of in the way when I first heard 9 out of 10, you're like, whoa, he can do a song like that. And Graveyard Song is like a acoustic built rocker with some like interesting chord changes at the beginning, and you're like, oh, okay, that's a little fresh.
Yeah, I thought that one was kind of bomby also.
Mm-hmm.
Like first couple of records of Bomb, where he would like bust out acoustic guitar for like something that didn't seem like, but that was like incongruous against what he was singing, you know? It's like,
yeah, I like that. Yeah, it's cool. I mean,
I like the track Soft Living. That's immediately my favorite on the album.
I really liked Future Is Dumb. That hit me. Soft Living's really good. There's some like really standout lyrics on that one too that like get you. But it's cool, man. I mean, we've talked about him. There's a reason he's like our favorite. Like, how many Bomb records are there? Like, I'm looking up the Bomb records as we speak. Right. So, okay, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 Bomb records, I'd say, plus singles. And now this is the fifth Jeff solo album. So that's 12. Is that right? I said 7 Bomb albums.
Yeah.
So
I think that's right.
So I'm just like, there's no. Yeah, so there's no other artists where I'm like, I mean, there are, I guess, a couple, but I'm like, I'm 12 records deep on Jeff material plus like all sorts. There's like a live album and EPs, yeah. And then there's Antarctica Vespucci.
Oh,
and
yeah. You can go back to Three Cheers with ASOB.
ASOB.
See where it all really began.
Yeah. So it's, I mean.
Do you ever get into Pegasus's XL?
No, I remember there's that. I remember there's the band Kudrow was like another band he had some point.
Those bands get a lot of love on like the forums.
Oh yeah.
Like asking for that shit to come back. It's like, I don't think it ever will, but
yeah. And now we're going to get a Craig of the Creek movie soundtrack.
Yeah. So I didn't even know that they had announced that we're doing a Craig of the Creek movie.
Yeah.
But
on this podcast I listened to, Jeff was saying it should probably be out on HBO Max by the end of the year.
Hell yeah.
We'll have to do it. We should do an ep on that.
Yeah, we'll have to. Yeah. Just the stuff he's been posting about the recording session. Did you read the Dan Ozzie interview he did with Jeff?
Oh, not the whole thing, but I opened it up.
Like the setting of it was like against him scoring the movie, like in his home studio, just like freaking out. And then they, like, I think Dan Ozzie was just hanging out in his basement, like watching him like have a fucking meltdown.
Yeah.
And like, they're like every couple hours, like they were just like talk, and he would just like record like some questions.
Yeah.
It was just Dan Ozzie like spending the day with Jeff freaking out.
Oh my God. Yeah, I need to. Yeah, where it's like he's really busy. I mean, I guess that's like, yeah, I remember reading that, but people would be like, because he drank so many songs about like drinking beers and partying and everything, and like Bomb was like a party band. And so that's what you think Jeff is, but then it's like, I mean, it's pretty clear. I mean, 12 great albums and scoring a show, and it's like, no, the guy knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
And I was listening to the interview, he was talking about how he was like really taking it seriously and almost like going too ambitious on the soundtrack. It sounded like hiring an orchestra, which no one asked him to do. He was like, it's a movie, so we should do an orchestra. And he was talking about how he was busting out a lot of music theory stuff, that like 12 tone scales and stuff. And he was talking about, he went to school for music. He was like, yeah, I was really good at theory, but like I had no application for it.
He went to school for music? I thought he went for graphic design.
No, I think he did both. Because I think he went to NYU, where you can make up your own major.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He had rich parents.
I guess so.
From Long Island.
The Gallatin School or whatever. Do you know about that?
No.
Yeah, at NYU, I don't know if you can still do it. Or I don't know. But I remember meeting another guy when I was at Delaware. He was like a DIY punk guy who like stayed at our friend's house and was touring, and it was called Attica. He was touring the country on a bike, but he went there and like, you could like make up your own major, but you had to like get it approved by people.
Oh, well I kind of did that at Delaware.
Mm-hmm.
And by making up my own curriculum, I basically just said, hey, I want to do more music and less bullshit. So maybe don't require me to take math and science, and I'll just take master's level music classes. And they're like, all right, that seems okay.
That's awesome.
So yeah, I went all through my entire undergrad, all 4 years, without having to take a single math or science class. Yeah. So glad I dodged that bullet.
Dude, that's a feat, man.
Yeah.
I love that.
And I just had to take like crazy research seminars with the grad students.
So good. But yeah, continue to love Jeff. I'm going to go see him on Thursday at Terminal 5. Very, very big show. 3,000 person venue.
Bummed I'm missing that one. Next weekend is an insane weekend for shows, and I'm missing all of them because I have to work insane shows.
Dude, we would have been going to Chris Farron and Diners.
Dude, okay.
I love this Diners album. And Chris.
Chris Farron, the 9th?
Yeah.
Saturday the 9th. Chris Farron's playing Elsewhere. But also, Hans Gruber and the Diehards are playing a show in Brooklyn. I forget what venue. And then also, the Scottalites are playing at Brooklyn Bowl, which I would be working normally, except also, I have to do a wedding band gig upstate. So yeah, there's just insane gigs and I'm missing all of them because I have to work other insane gigs, and what a bummer.
Yeah. Well, dude, we'll see Jeff again together soon.
Yeah. Chris Farron, I should say, on first listen, I kind of liked his album better than I liked Hell Mode.
It doesn't have to be a competition, Eric.
It doesn't, but on first listen,
you want to make it a competition. You like that album a lot.
Yes. And I will say that one of my least favorite songs on Hell Mode is Liked You Better, like the lead single.
Oh, really?
And
that's my favorite song on the album.
I can't get it. And like having that be like the representative for like the album that I know the most anyway, like that has made it difficult for me.
Interesting. What do you not like about this song?
I don't like the melody. Oh. And it's all about that melody.
Yeah. Huh. I love that melody. I know they do it a bunch of times, as songs do. That to me was one of the best songs. But you love the Chris Farron records, Doomsinger.
Yes.
Cool. I found the billboard when I went to in LA when I went to breakfast. Was like at the Chris Farron billboard, which was really fun. But it's a good album. Do you have a favorite song on that one?
I think it's the second single, Bluish.
Yeah. I'd say it's like definitely my favorite Chris solo record. Like, I think it's really good.
I will say this, after these two, like this 1-2 punch of like the best Chris Farron album and a really great, mature, maybe the best Jeff Rosenstock album.
We'll see.
We are poised for the best Antarctica Vespucci album.
Yeah. I know. We really are. I loved, yeah. I'm looking this now. Only You, Doomsinger. The song Doomsinger is good. My Beauty. Antarctica. I think the first Antarctica soulmate stuff, to me, that is like kind of that's like a perfect album.
Thinking about when it happened, right? 2014.
Yeah.
That predated any of the real like Death Rosenstock albums. Like he had just put out I Look Like Shit.
Yeah.
And
Bomb was over. It was sort of like you didn't know if there was going to be more Jeff Rosenstock music or not. Like it was.
Yeah. Like that. Yeah. Soulmate stuff. It came out at a time that was just, I don't think I appreciated like the harbinger that it was. Like it really set the tone for like what was going to happen thereafter. And I don't think we were able to appreciate that, like just the immensity of that moment. Like here's this, because it's just like a short little EP too. It's like, it's not like a full album. Like,
yeah.
And
although I love it, cause it is an album. It's 7 songs, but the way it flows and is structured is like album worth. Like it's enough like of a statement. Cause like then they did the next one. It's like 4 songs. Like, you know, sometimes people do EPs and it's like,
yeah.
Okay, there's a few songs. This was like, no, there's an intro that comes back later.
Right. I thought that's so funny. 100 years and then 100 years to 200 years.
Yeah.
A nice little reprisal.
Yeah. It's great and all the songs are great. I went to their first show at Shea Stadium in Brooklyn. Yeah. And it was like fucking awesome. I went to the last Bomb show too. So it was like, I remember like, yeah, after the last Bomb show, I was like, it was so epic. Seeing at Warsaw sold out, I was like, can't end here. Such a good band. excited for more. Yeah, definitely. Like, I needed it. Like, I've been talking about, like, yeah, I'm going to finish this record I've been working on for like 3 years. And now, like, I've gotten to that place, Eric, where I'm feeling existential, where I'm just like, what the fuck have I been doing? Like, I didn't finish this. And I think it's because, like, recording music is, like, so, and tracking, like, I don't know why it, like, rattles me so much and is really hard. But I was working, I was like, oh, I'm so much better than I used to be 3 years ago. Like, I actually am, but even, like, a year ago, even though I've had, like, one of the weirdly toughest years, I'm still better. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to finish it out. And, like, I got to take some from the Jeff school, which is, like, dude, just keep going. Then you'll make another album after that. And you'll just play shows. Like, it's what you do. It's like, just finish it and go. And I'm like, yeah, what the fuck am I doing? So I'm definitely feeling the inspired thing. Yeah. Anyway, we know what we're going to watch next week. We don't have to pick a new episode. We already did plugs. I don't think we have anything else to really do.
Yeah, okay.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
All right, peace out, y'all.
Have a good week.